This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the movie Syriana, George Clooney plays Bob Barnes, a veteran operations officer with the CIA who is trying to stop illegal arms trafficking in the Middle East. The movie was both a critical and box office success, and it won Clooney the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor.
This is your specific skill set.
His money's in a lot of dark corners.
I want you to take him from his hotel, drug him, put him in the front of a car, and run a truck into him at 50 miles an hour.
It's good to have you back in town, Bob.
You want to know what the business world thinks of you? We think 100 years ago you were living out here in tents in the desert chopping each other's heads off, and that's exactly where you're going to be in another 100. So, yes, on behalf of my firm...
The movie was loosely adapted from the book See No Evil, The True Story of a Ground Soldier in the CIA's War Against Terrorism, the real-life story of Robert Baer, a former CIA case officer in the Directorate of Operations.
Bob Baer is no longer with the agency. These days, he finds himself in safer environs, writing books, working for CNN, and producing compelling television for the likes of history.
My name is Bob Baer. I spent 21 years in the CIA in operations. I was mostly in the Middle East, but served in Asia as well, including India. And now I work for CNN and I write books.
You're listening to The Evening Edition with Ezra and Uma, and today we're speaking to American author and former CIA case officer, Bob Baer.
You joined the agency at the age of 22. You dedicated 21 years of your life to the agency. You met your wife there. But you've often said that spy work is incredibly unsexy, dull even. Tell us what day-to-day work in the CIA is like and how it differs from what we see on TV.
Well, I think what we all miss on TV is that you spend the first 8 hours of your day in a cover office. You know, if you're in a shipping office in Penang, for instance, and you get off and you go home and you have dinner and you see the family and the rest of it. And your real work starts about 11 o'clock at night when you jump in a car and drive across town, look for surveillance. Once you've decided you don't have surveillance, then you you go pick up what we call an agent or an asset or a source and you debrief them. And, you know, this could take place at driving around for hours and hours. I've had meetings that go for 6 hours where you're just driving. And then you come home, you start the next day. But it's, we always say, when you have to pull a gun out, the operation has failed. I mean, I got out of that, the dullness of it, by going working in war zones. I worked in Iraq, Lebanon, the Sudan, Central Asia during, you know, during the civil wars there in the 90s, simply because I got bored with strict espionage. And I ended up in Iraq in an assassination attempt on Saddam Hussein.
And of course, on that flip side, did you find yourself in almost sort of Jason Bourne, James Bond-like situations in the Middle East?
Well, I did. Except when the shooting started, I tended to crouch down, pull the weapon out and shoot back. It was, I mean, it's you know, I carried guns for years, but I was never very excited about getting in gunfights. And when I was at the wrong end of a shelling, an artillery shelling, that, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. You just sort of ignored that. So I was constantly in very weird, you know, Jason Bourne-like situations, but not that I rushed toward them.
In your book, The Perfect Kill, you talk about the time when you had to kill a Hezbollah leader, Imad Mughniyeh. Describe what that operation was like and talk to us about your life during that period.
I was in Lebanon during the Civil War, and Mr. Mughniyeh had killed two of my bosses, one in an embassy explosion. The second one, he kidnapped, and the man died of torture and pneumonia. And he also was involved in several shooting downs of airplanes, hijacking airplanes and hostages. So he was number one on our target list. The problem was he was so good at what he did. I mean, he was, frankly, more adept at murder than we were. And he was a hard man to find. I mean, he never, you know, exited a building the same place he entered. He stayed off telephone lines. His intelligence was incredible. And he was a ghost. And it's not easy to chase a ghost and catch him. He was eventually, I had nothing to do with this, but he was run down and murdered in Damascus by the CIA. He was killed with a bomb attached to his car. And two CIA officers watched him as he walked behind the car, and they exploded the bomb remotely and killed him in Damascus.
Bob, as you're telling us these stories and these incidents, I'm just wondering how much as an ex-CIA can you talk about these stories and these incidents of the past? Is there a gentlemanly rule about disclosing these kinds of details? How does it work?
Every word I write in my book, they don't go after the politics of it, but what they go after is what they call sources and methods, revealing secrets. And it does not pay to be a whistleblower. So what I do is when a manuscript's finished, I send it to the CIA. And they're extremely critical, and they put pressure me on, to change the tone and various things like that. But I won't do that. But if they have a legitimate secret, we agree that I take it out. And it's book number 6, and I've done that every book. There's just some, and the amazing thing for me is I've just put some, I've had this technique of putting some sort of outrageous secrets in my books, assuming they're going to take that out and leave the other stuff in. But oddly enough, sometimes they let the deep secrets into the book. And people who know my writing, intelligence people, will tell you exactly where that stuff is. I mean, I've had the Israeli intelligence call me up and ask me about questions about my books. They found just absolutely fascinating parts of it. These books are very much an insider's tale with sort of all the dirt and the rest of it. And, and for me, the important thing is the self-criticism as well and the criticism of the CIA, because I'm not a spokesman for the CIA in any sense.
Etched into the wall of the original CIA building's main lobby, there's a biblical verse that characterizes the intelligence mission in a free society. It reads like this: "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." John chapter 8, verse 22. And for Bob Baer, he was always a true believer.
In the truth, yes, I just don't care. I mean, for me, if the truth is destructive of oneself, you still have to tell it. I'm in an age now when I have very few transgressions, so it's easy to tell the truth, sort of like an old, really old person. And the longer I spent in the CIA, the more committed I got to telling the truth. So by the end of my career at the CIA, I was going into staff meetings and just blurting it out. And people looked at me like I was nuts. I mean, truly nuts. And when I resigned from the CIA, I didn't retire. I just said, I have just enough of this BS and I'm out of here. And ever since, I've been writing these books, And they're very, and anybody who's read them, they'll see they're very self-critical. And it's like the hunt for Hitler. I'm very critical about where the investigation falls apart and where it's a surprise to me. Because essentially, if you're going to tell a story, you have to follow the story and not care about the personal outcome.
And Bob, we're going to get into hunting Hitler, but I guess the final question about your involvement in the CIA, given where you are now, what is life like as a civilian after the CIA?
I work a lot in entertainment. I've got a couple TV shows. The Perfect Kill is being made into a TV show by Ron Howard and Fox. And, of course, it's dramatic. It's scripted. And I write movies and I write TV series because I like to write. I've recently been asked to run for Congress for the Democratic Party, but the whole idea of Congress is so distasteful. I've decided to say no. In fact, it's the first interview where I'm telling people I'm not going to run for politics.
To be fair, Bob, running for Congress sounds more distasteful than killing someone.
Exactly. Thank you very much. I needed that vote of confidence.
After this, we're going to speak to Bob Baer about his brand new television project in which he leads a crack team of investigators seeking to uncover the truth behind what happened to Adolf Hitler after the fall of the Nazi Empire. This is The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
In early 2014, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, they declassified hundreds of pages of top secret documents. And in these documents, it proved that top officials in the US government not only believed that Hitler escaped Germany, but were also secretly spending millions of dollars trying to track him down. In fact, there's a memo from J. Edgar Hoover himself, and this is what it says. American Army officials in Germany have not located Hitler's body, nor is there any reliable source that will say definitively that Hitler is dead.
A new television show on history called Hunting Hitler follows a team of renowned investigators as they reopen the world's most famous cold case in a definitive search to discover if one of history's most notorious war criminals, Adolf Hitler, actually survived World War II. The team is led by former CIA case officer Bob Baer.
The fate of Hitler in April 1945 is the biggest mystery to come out of that war, barring none.
The American Army officials in Germany have not located Hitler's body.
Ever since the fall of Berlin, there's been many different conspiracy theories about what did or did not happen.
A comprehensive investigation needs to be done.
We have to look at what's the best way to approach this, to bring it to a successful conclusion. We're not going to do it as an active criminal investigation because too much time has gone by.
The time to do it was 1945. We are attempting to clean up a botched investigation. There wasn't a cover-up, it was just negligence. People went with the common assumption that he died in the bunker, and that's the mother of all.
Do we have that other photograph, the one that...
This is the evening edition with Uma and Ezra, and on the show with us today is Bob Baer. We're talking about the search for Adolf Hitler, but not before digressing into a conversation about the 1988 downing of Pan Am Flight 103, the siege of Abbottabad for Osama bin Laden, and Ahmad Shalabi, the man who played a key role in leading America to war in Iraq.
This isn't the first time you've worked on debunking a popular narrative. I mean, you were one of the main participants on Lockerbie Revisited, where you claimed the CIA knew right from the get-go that Pan Am 103 had been orchestrated by Iran.
Well, exactly. I mean, look, I get this fight every single day. I fight with the FBI, talk to two FBI agents, and I said, hey, dudes, the intelligence implicates Iran. I said, maybe they were. I don't know enough about the case. Maybe they were involved with the Libyans. I don't know, but there's this intelligence out there, and I can tell you where it is. And I've told the FBI, and they said, well, we don't really have the National Security Agency. And I said, this is just damn good stuff. And the Iranians were mad. We shot down their Airbus. And they felt obligated to shoot down an American airplane. You know, don't even look at the morality of it, but there is just fantastic intelligence that even after Autumn leaves, those arrests in Germany, they were involved in this. And this thing, you know, pursuing this truth has ended me up on an assassination list. Iran, the FBI came and visited me last year and said, you're on a list, don't go to the Middle East, don't go most any places. And, you know, I love the Iranians, and I understand the Iranian regime and the rest of it. It's not personal, and I'm not a neocon. It's just the evidence, the intelligence is out there, and I don't care what people say. And I just know that one Libyan didn't wake up one morning and decide to take down an American airliner. It just doesn't happen. That's not the way Libya works. And then this all this nonsense about Abdullah Senussi, though they've discovered he maybe he was in it. Well, you know, he was suspected from day one. So it's just the media, the narrative, this political public narrative that starts, which I always like to fight with the public narrative because it serves political interests rather than the truth. And I do think the truth sets you free. It's like sunshine. It cures things.
And Bob, when you're going against the grain, against popular narrative, and sure, I mean, you have been trained to think critically and analyze the evidence before you, but when everybody else seems to sort of look at your assessment and say, well, maybe, Bob, maybe that's not really the case, how do you manage your doubt?
I don't care. You know, it's like Abbottabad, the raid into Abbottabad.
Right.
No one wants to look at the facts. A Black Hawk helicopter can fly 350 miles without a bladder. And that means that those two helicopters that went in had to have what's called a FARP, a forward area refueling point, which would have been in Pakistan, which would have meant 500 Rangers. And where in Pakistan does an American invasion occur? How did this happen? And why did all of the locals around Abbottabad call the police, and we're told, don't do anything because the military is, there's a stand down. Whatever's happening next to you, we've been told to ignore. I mean, come on, this is a matter of record. I mean, things are not as we're told, or that bin Laden was dressed as a woman, or the women were protecting him. Or, you know, it's one lie, political lie after another. And I don't care what, you know, if I'm wrong, then I just want somebody to tell me why I'm wrong, that how they made a Black Hawk helicopter fly more than 350 miles on a normal fuel tank, because it can't. It's impossible. And so, you know, those helicopters were flown in from very close. And so a movie like Zero Dark Thirty is just pure war propaganda. And I don't like war propaganda because it gets us into wars we don't need to be in. And, you know, these lies, if you perpetuate them, just get you deeper and deeper into trouble, and a lot more people die for no reason.
And, you know, Bob, this brings us back to Hunting Hitler, because it seems like, first of all, Ezra and I are real suckers for this sort of thing. We love it. When we were watching the episode yesterday, we were giddy like schoolgirls. But and it brings us back to this lie agreed upon, because it seems to serve this common purpose, right? You mentioned in Hunting Hitler, the war had come to an end. Everybody needed Hitler to be dead. It wasn't enough that, you know, they had surrendered. And I guess the same applies to Lockerbie, the same applies to Osama bin Laden. So do these lies agreed upon serve a greater good?
No, I don't think they do. I think they're meant to make us feel better. You know, it's sort of Exxon's lying about global warming. You know, it made us feel good for, you know, 20 or 30 years. But ultimately, we're going to pay the price for these lies. I mean, look at the lies about Iraq. And it got the United States into war, and you've had, I don't know, what is it, 250,000 of Iraqis are dead? I mean, we can't say that served their purpose, you know, and I know all the people that got us into that war. I know all the neocons, and I met them before the war, and I said, this guy Chalabi, the guy who talked us into the Iraqis, he made this stuff up, you know, and here's where the intelligence is. And all of them, no one looked. It was at the National Security Agency, and no one wanted to go look and, you know, make up these stories about weapons of mass destruction, and because the neocons wanted a war of vengeance against Muslims. And it was the wrong war, wrong enemy. And, you know, and it's look what's happened to the world. I mean, they created the Islamic State. George Bush did, and Dick Cheney. That's just a fact. Even Prime Minister Blair has admitted it, that they created it. So these lies, these political lies, the political narrative, at the end of the day, don't serve us, because people are smart enough to figure out the truth for themselves. Just give them the facts, let them come to their own conclusions, and then go from there. And ultimately, we as, you know, humanity and the world is a lot better off for dealing in the truth.
And so, speaking of those, I guess, political lies and the story of Adolf Hitler's death, was that something that you were always suspicious about, or was it something that was instigated by the discovery of these FBI memos that were recently declassified?
No, my mother was something of a historian, and she always told me he died in the bunker, and that was the truth I lived with. You know, I thought there was just no question about it. I thought, you know, that his body was, the Russians had it, and he died in the bunker. That was the end of the story. But now it comes out that the United States government had a full-on search for him. They didn't believe. I mean, we're not talking about crazy conspiracy theory people. We're talking about the FBI, OSS, you know, predecessor of the CIA. We're talking about the Department of Defense. Everybody was looking for Hitler, including Stalin, who didn't believe he died in the bunker. And this was like, it just opened my eyes that the narrative from 45 was sloppy history, and it made people feel better that the war had come to an end, Hitler was dead, and everybody could move on. So, you know, at each stage, and it was really the FBI documents were so important for me, because it was an organized search, and whether they actually were able to track him or not is not important. What is the American government, and I assume the British government, and certainly the Russians, considered the possibility that he got away.
Folks, we're speaking today to American author and former CIA case officer Bob Baer. He's got a brand new television series on history. It's called Hunting Hitler. You can catch episodes on Astro Channel 555 and 575 in HD every Friday at 10 p.m.
After this, we ask Bob about his relentless pursuit for the truth. This is the Evening Edition BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Evening Edition. I'm Umar Paganampike Pagan.
And I'm Ezra Zion.
We're joined today by American author and former CIA case officer Bob Baer, and we're talking about his brand new television series, Hunting Hitler.
And in this show, he leads a crack team of investigators on a worldwide quest to uncover whether or not Hitler actually killed himself in that bunker on April 30th, 1945.
You know, Bob, what I liked about the first episode was that bit when you go, hey, whether it's true or not, I don't mind. Whether he's alive or not after 1945, after the bunker, I don't care. I just want to get to the truth. I mean, is that the mindset you need to be in before undertaking this kind of project?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you have to go where the evidence is. I mean, you know, the outcome, it makes no difference to me, even working for history. And I don't care. I mean, I still say what I believe. It's just you have to go where the evidence takes you. And it's like a trial. You know, you've got to deal in facts. And that's all I cared about, because I hate conspiracy theories. I truly do. I mean, we're talking about doing JFK assassination, and I hate the idea because you're keeping company with a lot of crazy people that believe in wild conspiracies, which intellectually does you no good at all. But on the other hand, if you want to get to the truth, you have to brush up against these things. And I've done that in the CIA for years. I mean, we used to chase a thing called Red Mercury, and it was some fantastical thing that you could put on radar, and you know, we had to run it down until, you know, everybody said, no, there's no such thing as Red Mercury or Lockerbie or any number of things. And you just have to keep on picking away at it. And then, you know, once you're in the middle of these investigations, and then you're watching the press, the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they're dealing in political fantasy. And, you know, you're reading it. You're saying, this isn't what's happening. I'm listening to the intercepts. I'm looking at the satellites, and they're wrong. But they're taking their propaganda from, you know, spokesmen, from flacks in the government who have political interests. So, it really takes you a long time to chip away at the truth, and you're always looking for somebody smarter than you who will come along and tell you why you're wrong. And I've never stopped that. You put somebody on the phone who knows more than me, and I'll shut up and listen.
Bob, in the show Hunting Hitler, you work alongside a whole bunch of, I guess, other investigators and specialists in their field, everything from U.S. Special Forces to a Nazi hunter to a war crimes investigator. In researching all of these details, I think one of the more challenging things about this proposition is you're investigating while you're shooting a show, and you're also chasing a ghost from about, you know, 70 odd years ago. It's certainly an interesting process from a viewer's perspective. What was it like being in that process?
Well, a lot of the films we watched from Los Angeles, I frankly like to be out in the field. But since I was heading this investigation, or the host, whatever you want to call me, it was interesting. I mean, because the producers were all dealing in original documents, and locations we found of these Nazi facilities were, I mean, basically the field teams had to convince me that we were dealing with something real. I mean, you know, whether it's a landing strip, could a plane land there? To a Nazi facility in the Canary Islands, which is one of the most strange places I've ever seen in my life. It It was the head of hospital, and I was in the middle of nowhere on the coast of the Canary Islands, and it was a Nazi facility. I mean, who builds a hospital there? Or the compound in Misiones, which is just bizarre beyond belief. I know the tri-border region down there in Argentina, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. All the jihadists are there right now, and why would you, with that much isolation, why would you then turn around and build a compound with guard, you know, shooting ports and electricity, and, you know, most of the Nazis that ended up in Argentina just, you know, integrated into German communities and disappeared for the most part.
Right.
But not whoever was meant for this was, you know, meant to go there was a very important person, and maybe Adolf Hitler. So, you know, once you start getting the geography of these places and the circumstances and looking at the files of these people, these Nazis, it was an eye-opener for me.
So, Bob Baer, ex-CIA, would you say that you believe Hitler died in that bunker in 1945?
Look, this is Bob Baer, the person who believes in logic and accepts the most, he grabs for the simplest explanation. I think in the absence of, I think we all sort of agree that we have to stick with the narrative that he died in the bunker, but there's certainly a large possibility that he did make it out and died somewhere in South America. And there was certainly the route was set up for him to leave, and he could have made it there, and we never knew it. And let me say this, is the FBI believed he got there.
All right, Bob, one last question before I let you go. You wouldn't be able to tell us who killed JFK, would you?
I was just talking to somebody about this, about, well, you know, there's the Cuban angle, which was kept away from the Warren Commission. The CIA went out of its way to keep all the evidence implicating Cuba from the Warren Commission. This is just coming out now.
All right, we'll leave it on that note then. Bob Baer, thank you very much for speaking to us. You've given us lots to think about. All the best with Hunting Hitler. I think it's going to be a great hit. And thanks again for your time.
That was American author and former CIA case officer Bob Baer. His brand new television series, Hunting Hitler, is on History. That's Astro Channel 555 and 575 every Friday at 10 p.m. You can also find previous episodes on iTunes.
And that's it for us. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you missed any part of this program, you certainly can download the podcast at our website, bfm.my. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.